You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans. Welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 332, our recap podcast for Notre Dame's loss to Michigan State. We've got a lot of topics to cover today. We probably won't be hitting a lot of numbers. We'll be hitting a few here and there. But some of the topics we want to discuss are the possible elements for either the success or failure of a football team. Notre Dame's third down defense. And then a lot of fans, when I was sitting around the table, were complaining about not passing the ball downfield. And it definitely, watching it through the first time, it definitely appeared that way. After Notre Dame did start passing downfield in the late in the second half, definitely seemed Notre Dame's offense got on track. So we're going to be looking at that in a little more detail. And then Brian Kelly deciding to punt towards the end of the game versus going for it on fourth down. And then also we're going to look at some of the best things and the worst things in this game. Maybe looking at a play, particular player, and giving our opinion on that. But first off, the saying, the straw that broke the camel's back. Well, in this case, it's the bale that broke the camel's back. And Randall and I have two different takes on this. The punt turnover that where it hit the leg on the punt return of
Miles Boykin.
And then a play or two later, touchdown pass over Cole Luke. Cole in good position, but wasn't able to come down with the interception. Instead, it ended up in a touchdown for Michigan State. And then C.J. Sanders fumble on a catch. And these are all in a very short amount of time. I believe it was the next play. C.J. Sanders catches a pass, fumbles the ball, and then a few plays later, but on Michigan State's next drive, Julian Love had a shot at a sack, Notre Dame's first of the season, and he missed the sack. It didn't end up turning into points for Notre Dame. They did force a punt, but the Irish did start out then on the one-yard line after receiving that punt. And Randall's also got a list, the bale that broke the camel's back.
Well, there's just multiple plays. They're just stupid mistakes that need to be fixed. That a team like Notre Dame should not be doing. Obviously, the first one was C.J. Sanders' kickoff return for a touchdown, and then called back because Jalen Elliott had a penalty, which probably wouldn't have made a difference. He would have scored the touchdown anyways. So there's a mistake, obviously, a freshman. Folston's touchdown was overturned because Durham Smythe had an illegal block, which was questionable if it should have been called. He did touch him, look, and it was kind of like falling towards him, but it wasn't anything that bad.
It wasn't horrible, but I can't really argue with the call either.
No, but it shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, it definitely shouldn't have happened.
Mental mistake on Smythe's part.
And second week where we've had tight ends causing penalties that either stopped a conversion or stopped a touchdown.
Yeah, and then the punt hits Miles Boykin's leg after the defense had got a three and out. And then Sanders fumble on the first play. And right there, those are all momentum-killing things, and it's just stupid stuff that could have been prevented. And I keep thinking, especially like on Smythe, the comment that Brian Kelly's telling them, turn your brain on. And it seems like it's in so many instances in this game, they're just small stuff like that. I mean, I guess if you want to look at the bright side of things, it's stuff that should be able to be fixed in a week's time. Shouldn't take that long to fix them. It's not like it's going to take an entire year. But same time, it's just, why aren't they cleaning that up in the third game of the year?
All right. And one thing I was thinking about, what are elements that go into a football team on both sides of the ball and even on special teams, but on each side of the ball, on the offense, on the defense, what are some elements that having success or having failure on that side of the ball. And I think there's three. Either it's player, either athleticism and overall gaming, game-making or playmaking ability. Two, coaching from the position coach position as far as technique, coaching a player up, maybe even mentally, being able coaching them, helping them to read the offense better on if you're on the defensive side of the ball. And then third, overall coaching scheme, where maybe it's just a bad play call for that particular instance or a scheme that is just faulty and not suited to your players. And I think looking at, obviously, the defense is getting most of the criticism, and I do believe rightfully so. The offense also has issues and is not flawless by any means. But when we look at, and would you add anything more to this, Randall, to this list of three that I came up with?
Well, the offense and the defense, the special teams had issues. There was issues in every
no, but I mean,
game. But yeah, I agree. There's a whole list. You could come with a whole list of things that.
And I think on the defensive side of the ball, it's a little bit of all three of these. We see players that you know are missing tackles. They're not physically able to get off blocks. They're not physically able to blow up offensive linemen. There's a few plays here and there, but don't stick from a consistent basis like we did from Michigan State's defense. And then even on definitely on the coaching side, I think part of the players being able to get off blocks comes down to coaching as well with proper technique. And we see a lot of times when Notre Dame is just using one arm, especially close to the line of scrimmage, they're being blocked, but they're not getting off the block. They're just trying to reach out and tackle the offensive player with one arm. And that's not a recipe for success. I mean, that's going to be a broken tackle most of the time. And then even the scheme. I mean, I think the biggest and fairest criticism of Notre Dame's defense was in week one with the 3-3-5 playing Texas. But then again, even in this Michigan State game, and Brian Kelly shouldered a lot of this blame on himself and the other coaches, especially in his postgame presser where he was talking about, we've got problems as coaches if we can't properly coach defending that final play that Michigan State converted.
Yeah, and talking about the assistants, usually when you see the coaches, Brian Kelly talking to any of the other coaches, he's usually talking to Brian Van Gorder. But there was one instance, I think it was after Cole Luke gave up the big third down catch on Michigan State's final drive that basically ended the game. It looked like he was talking to Van Gorder, getting after him, and I think he was a little bit, but then he walked right on past Van Gorder and was talking to Todd Light, and which obviously that would be one of Todd Light's players as a positional coach. But I agree that here's where I'm at. I think the defense is terrible. Brian Van Gorder has issues. They got to change stuff, but a lot of people think I'm defending the defense, and the bottom line is I'm not. I think there's so many more issues than just this defense. It starts with Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly was a defensive coach. He started out as a defensive coordinator. So why can't he step in and or why isn't he doing more with this defense? He has to see how bad it is, which I do think he is more involved than what we think.
Well, hold on though. To counter that point, listening to the media cover this, I've heard them say multiple times that Brian Kelly is often over with on the offensive side of the ball, and even we heard him say it in fall camp too, I think, or somehow I forget how I heard, but he was Equanimeous St. Brown talking to him as far as route running, and I haven't heard that he's been with the defense at all, or at least not if he has been, it hasn't been. It's been noticeably different from what he is spending with the offense.
Oh, I agree. That's as far as the interaction with the players. What I'm saying is behind closed doors, when the coaches are coming up with the play with the game plan, he's involved.
Oh, I doubt. Yeah, he said he said everything goes through him and he okays it.
That's a problem right there. The 3-3-5.
That definitely went through his door.
So if he was a defensive coordinator, surely he can change. If this scheme is so terrible, why isn't he changing it? You can't tell me that he's not involved with the scheming part of this. So you have that.
Okay, but on that, do you think he was involved with Bob Diaco's schemes on defense?
Maybe not as much because he didn't need to.
Well, but when he came into Notre Dame,
he was all about the defense.
Yes, he was. We're gonna. He might have been the defense.
He might have been. I think there's more. He's more involved than what most of us know.
I think he was more involved with the defense back then than he is now.
You can't really tell. This is all a theory.
This is all speculation. I know,
but if it's this bad, you can't tell me the head coach is going to put his job on the line and not do something about this or try to. And I guarantee you he's trying behind closed doors, and obviously his plan isn't working either.
True.
The other side is, if the defense is so bad, Brian Kelly also has these high-powered offenses that can supposedly score points. So come out and score points and take some of the pressure off of your defense. And maybe the reason I think like this a little more than some people do is because I'm a Colts fan, and the Colts never have a good defense. I mean, they're okay, but a lot of it has been masked when Peyton Manning was there. Because they would come out and score two touchdowns right away. And then it put the other team on their heels, and it changed what they had to do. They couldn't stick with their game plan that they originally had. They had to change a few things, which took pressure off the defense. Whenever the Colts got behind at the beginning of the game, they struggled. They struggled the whole game. Those are the games they lost. So you supposedly have all these offensive players, high-powered offense. Don't wait until the third and fourth quarter to start scoring points or moving your offense. Do that right away. That's what I'm saying. We discussed it last week. You didn't think I said they're coming out slow on offense. They have slow starts. They're not, depending what you compare it with, it's not slow. But they should be able to do better than this. And if you look at all the big games that Notre Dame plays and loses, they're always playing from behind. And at some point, you can't put all that blame on the defense.
Okay, I'm also a Colts fan. And I remember hearing TV guys, fans, talk about this Colts defense is built to play from ahead. And that if they aren't ahead, they struggle, like you just said. Honestly, I don't buy it. Because for one thing,
I will give you this: the Colts didn't win as many Super Bowls as they should have, but they won a lot of games.
Here's the difference: so if the Colts start slow, let's say the other team gets ahead by 7 points or 14 points, well, the Colts eventually will probably start scoring. But the problem is the defense is going to keep on giving up points. So the score might end up, if the Colts fall behind by 14 points, the final score might end up being 35-28. But if the Colts start off scoring, then the score will be the Colts winning 42-35. The defense is still giving up the same amount of points. It's just that the Colts were able to score first and just stay ahead of the
But it still takes pressure off your defense.
I do agree with you. I do agree it does take pressure off the defense, but I don't think it's to the extent that you think it does.
Look, how much, there's just small things that you have to do. Yes, the defense, even if Notre Dame would have won this game, come back, there's just small things that you could do. They're still close games. Texas, this is just an 8-point game. It's not going to take a whole lot. You don't have to totally redo the defense. I mean, change a few things. And what I'm saying is I think that they should be able to do enough on offense to outscore the other team. Yeah, they're going to give up a lot of points. That's not going to change. They're still going to give up a lot of points. But it's not going to take an entire makeover for them to win these games.
And, okay, to your
point.
And
so what I'm saying is, I'm not trying to fix the defense. The defense is what it is. It's, like, basically beyond
fixing.
You
have no trust in the defense, pretty much.
So do other things. Like, clean up some of this other stuff. Your defense will still give up a lot of points, but you'll win these games. And in the end, that's all that matters, winning the games. It doesn't matter if you gave up 70 points, okay, if you came out on top.
So we do need to talk about, I mean, is Notre Dame purposefully not taking shots downfield? And we're going to get to that. But I do want to say, as far as the defense, I think the defense plays best when they're behind by about three scores, because at that point the other offense is pretty much just running the football, and then if it is a third and long, then they'll pass it. So I think the defense is better off if we're playing from behind. No, I'm being facetious.
Well, honestly, when we were watching this game, we agreed that the defense didn't look that bad. The first part, there was like a 20-minute span. The third quarter, the end of the second quarter, and the third quarter, they did not look good at all.
Yeah.
Other than that, they did a good job. But you have these. I mean, the other thing is the missed tackles. I mean, see, those are some things that if you clean up those missed tackles, you don't have Drew Tranquil. Every time they go against Drew Tranquil, the receiver running back gets another 2-3 yards because they just bowl him over and he doesn't stop them. So I don't know what that is. I'd want to see the practice, you know, because they had these remote-controlled tackling dummies. Well, at this point, you're starting player, you've lost defensive players, your starters, your stars. So you might as well go full out and practice. If somebody gets hit, the next guy isn't that much worse than the guy that's starting. But something has to happen with this tackling. Right there, there's just... Yeah, the game probably wasn't as close to what the score is saying, but I think they can clean up enough stuff that they can win these games. Just getting rid of the defensive coordinator, that's just what I'm trying to say. Everybody's harping on the defensive coordinator. He is what he is. Brian Kelly is not going to get rid of him. We all know that. So do something. Make some changes so you can still win these games.
I'm not so sure that Brian Kelly won't get rid of him. He did say if we're giving up, I don't know if he said if we're giving up 30 points, but he said after the Texas game, if we're having this issue
at the end of the season.
I know that's what he said, and I think he was saying it. Well, of course we're not going to give up 50 points per game, and we're not.
Here's the other.
That's our new bar.
Hey,
50 points per game
in regulation. The other thing with the offense is we have three guys that are offensive. You have Brian Kelly. We have Mike Sanford, who is supposedly one of the top or the most wanted offensive guys, minds out there. And then you have Denbrock. So it's not just one guy calling these plays. So to me, you should be able to come up with a better game plan than they've been doing this year.
Let's talk about... Okay, passes downfield early, and I kind of want to include with that, is the offense, why aren't they starting out quickly? And the truth is, I don't think they're trying to start slowly. It's just that the defense they're going against is creating problems for them that's causing Notre Dame offensively to kind of react. Deshaun didn't look good there for a spell.
By the way, I think rewatching the game is that I do think some of it had to do with getting hit. It about had to. He got hit, and you'd always saw him doing his little stretches and swinging his arms, just doing different things. And those were not throws that we normally see from him. I mean, the last time we saw that would have been the spring game, you know, when Golson was still at Notre Dame.
One thing, I asked a question on Twitter. What's your worst game watching or game day viewing experience? And we're going to read off some of those stories. But it annoys me when the offense is struggling and Kyle and maybe some other fans are there, just throw the ball deep. Just throw it deep. And of course, it did kind of feel like Notre Dame was not throwing the ball deep. But he also wasn't complaining about this when Notre Dame was moving the ball. And they were moving it for a good portion of the first half. They didn't score nearly as many points as they should have. In huge part to interception, fumble or the turnover on special teams, and then the fumble by CJ Sanders. There was a lot of things that took opportunities away from our offense to score the ball. I mean, it was in huge part due to the offense was killing themselves. But when I went back and rewatched it, Notre Dame taking shots downfield, they did take shots downfield, and often Kizer was running out of time. He was scrambling out of the pocket sometimes, and sometimes he checked down. But you could see him look downfield and then dumped it off to a guy underneath. I know at least the one time it was Josh Adams. But it's not like later in the game, Notre Dame's offensive line did a much better job of pass protection. They were awful at times in the first half at pass protection, and that's another big difference. When he has time, he can find some of those guys downfield, but if you only have 3 seconds and then you're looking because you know you're going to get hit, and he was getting hit, I don't know how many times, but he was getting hit a lot.
Yes, I agree. The thing is, what Kyle was saying, I don't agree. I don't think he had those open shots at the beginning, because what Michigan State did is, one complaint I've had about Notre Dame in the past is that when Notre Dame gets a good lead, they start toning it down a little bit, just kind of relax, and then all of a sudden, the other team is mounting a comeback, and it takes a while for them to get back into the game, to get back into that aggressive mode, and that's what happened to Michigan State. They backed off. They weren't putting pressure on Notre Dame like they were in the first half of the game.
You're saying defensively.
Defensively.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they were struggling to get back. Like, we've seen this so often from Notre Dame, not putting teams away. And I think that's – Michigan State thought they did. They kind of took their foot off the gas a little bit. You know, let's not make huge mistakes. Yeah. Let's just let them make some plays and –
Like, even on the third drive in the first half, Kizer looked downfield and was sacked. Like, he looked, and then pressure got to him, he was sacked. Second play was a run, got a few yards. Third play, another looking downfield, pressured, sacked. And so, just saying, well, just throw the ball up deep. You need time for the receivers to get downfield. It's not like you
can just... The offensive line is not too good.
The ball can't just be snapped and you just heave it right away. And, yeah, the offensive line... It was very disappointing.
Question I have for you. Well, Notre Dame has had success. I guess this doesn't really... In this game, it did matter. The other games, Notre Dame has had success running the ball. But in a game like this, when do you just abandon the run and go Texas Tech and just throw? You have a quarterback that can do it. You have receivers. Like, at what point of the game do you just do that?
As long as there's time on the clock, I don't think you do. I mean, I think you pass 2-1, but you still need to run just so that they don't drop 8 in coverage. Because even when they were getting pressure on Kizer with just 4 guys.
Yeah. It. Yeah.
All right. There. Unfortunately, Pro Football Focus did write an article about this game. I did tweet it out. And you can look it up on Twitter or just go over to their profootballfocus.com, the website. And there was glowing things about Michigan State. Their linebackers played great, graded out very well. And you could see it. Notre Dame's running game was getting hit in the backfield way too many times. I believe there was a combined...
Because Josh Adams was getting double the carries than what Folsom...
That they weren't getting...
Sorry, I had to throw that in there. I had to throw that in there. I don't think that.
I think part of the reason that we saw them not use Josh Adams as heavily in Nevada was kind of to make sure he was ready, because I think they were planning on and they were going to ride Josh Adams as the primary back. He did carry 12 times for only 29 yards to Folston's 4 times. But Folston was in there a lot more than just those 4 plays. He was in there in pass protection quite a bit.
The one thing that Adams was still doing that he's done before, he needs to learn to, instead of when there's guy defenders in front of him, he needs to go forward and get those 2 yards.
Yeah.
He always starts dodging back and forth and doesn't get those extra yards, which do matter. You saw Folston. That was the one difference between them. Folston on the touchdown drive, he did it perfect. He dove in, got the touchdown. That instance, we would have probably seen Adams go back and forth and try to juke the defender and go around him. But I don't think it was a difference between the run. It wouldn't have mattered who you'd had in there as running back.
Just so people know, like, that touchdown by Folston didn't count then because of the penalty from Smythe. Just if someone's...
According to Pro Football Focus, neither running back broke a tackle.
Yeah.
Which...
When I was rewatching it, and I read the article before I rewatched it, I thought Folston... Actually, the reason he didn't, I think, is because that was negated.
Yes, that would have
I'm pretty sure he
been...
broke a tackle there.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'd have to go back and look at it. But that would have been the closest thing to breaking a tackle for either one of them. But I just think the offensive line, we're starting to see how good the offensive line was last year.
Yeah.
I mean.
I was one who was really high on them this year. I thought they were.
Everyone was.
I thought they were going to be better than last year. But before we move on, Pro Football Focus, great resource for if you're just interested in college football and you just like to read articles, great stuff over there. The big thing they do is fantasy football. They do have a special going on. Click on our banner over on our website, irishsportstalk.net. There's a banner on the right side. Click on it. It'll take you over to Pro Football Focus, and then you can get their Fantasy Gold membership, which is a $30 value if you sign up with FanDuel. So they also have a lot of resources for your typical standard fantasy football, but they also do the daily fantasy as well. So check that out. ProFootballFocus.com. All right, Notre Dame's third down defense really did struggle. They gave up, or Michigan State converted on half of their third down attempts, 9 of 18, and they also converted a fourth down. So, and to me, this just comes down to first and second down. Michigan State was seldom in third and long situations, just a few times. But on first down and second down, they were moving the ball forward, and there weren't enough negative plays created by Notre Dame's defense to put them in a lot of third and long situations.
And we talked about it in our preview, how Michigan State was just comfortable getting those short gains, 3-4 yards at a time. They had some long drives with a lot of plays, and they just worked their way down the field. And obviously the time of possession, you know, it was totally in their favor, 38 minutes to 22 minutes. So they did exactly what they wanted to. And they had 18 third downs. That's quite a few third downs. But they just, I don't think they really mind being that third down. I mean, obviously they'd want a first down, but they're okay with, you know, short gains. And just, they can do so much on those short third downs with the running backs they have.
Okay, let's finish this out. Brian Kelly going for it with 30 seconds left in the half. I'm still surprised he went for it. Michigan State was up 15-7, so it's not like they were up by a few scores. I'm surprised that he went for it, but he did, and I'm glad he did. There was about 30 seconds left over. I would like to see him go for it every single time. I know there is some risk with it, and I would like to see some of the numbers or the thinking behind it. If there's only 15 seconds left over, why not just go for it? Sure, it might be an interception, but it's probably going to be at the other end of the field for the opposing offense. They'd have to travel the whole length of the field. Sure, they could run it back, but it seems unlikely, and I would just like some numbers or some philosophy behind that.
Well, that was about the closest they're going to get and not actually scoring. I mean, I was surprised it was that close. Chase Claypool had his hands on the ball and just couldn't quite come down.
It was just
out of reach.
It was out of reach. He did touch it with both hands, but it was just out of reach.
If he would have the gloves that Odell Beckham wears, he would have probably caught it. But this is Notre Dame. Those gloves are probably banned in college. So,
all right, so I had asked a question. What are some of your worst game day viewing experiences? And we got a few people here. Here's one from JDoty97. Had an FSU stand between me and the door a week after the game in 2014. He told me if I wanted out, I needed to move him. He finally decided to get out of the way when he noticed how big I was. And then he mentioned someone else, I'm assuming was there, Melissa Doty. Dotoy, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. So it sounds like some relative. Melissa Doty later told me she'd bail me out if needed. So just running into a unhandy fan of a Florida State. And then we've got some other ones here. Elgonia 16. Last week at the Nevada game, guys behind me dropped the F-bomb every time something went relatively wrong. And that is annoying. I'm assuming that's probably Notre Dame fans. It is annoying being around people that if it's a bad pass or if it's...
Everything's so dramatic.
Yes, everything deserves an F-bomb. Musical Day 89, the guy who seems to always steal the coffee from everyone else because he predicts Notre Dame losses, and he didn't win it this week, but he might be wiser than what we all think. He tweeted out, "People who constantly yell at the ref, I'm talking every other play, shut up and relax, man." Again, I agree with that too. Reffing was bad in this game. There was missed calls, there was some bad spots, but I won't ever blame the refs for losing a game. They can screw things up.
Florida State?
We had other opportunities. We should have won that game.
Okay.
And what else do we got here?
Well, I will say Texas game was the first time that I was at an opposing team's stadium for any game, then it ended up being a loss. But it actually wasn't too bad. We hightailed it out of there while most of the fans were still in the stadium celebrating. But, you know, we had a couple of people, you know, yell something like, "Go Longhorn." But it was nothing. It wasn't bad at all. I figured we'd have plenty of drunks
it
out
probably,
there because they do drink. They sell beer in the stadium, which they don't at Notre Dame.
It probably would have been different had Notre Dame come away with the win.
I don't know. But it was a good experience.
We've got another one here. Mr. Polo 219. "At the MSU game this past weekend, when the guy in front of us smelled like onions, and of course he was an MSU fan."
Yeah, that's never good when you're packed into the stadium like that.
All right. Let's move over then. We talked mostly, we didn't talk about the final play of the game, and then we'll get to the worst things, the best things. So Notre Dame, or Brian Kelly, decides to punt it after scoring a few touchdowns and defensively holding Michigan State scoreless for a few drives. He decides to punt it, and, you know, it was fourth and long. Was it fourth and seven? Maybe it was fourth and ten.
No, I think it was fourth and seven. The problem is, before you got to that point, Kizer should not have gotten sacked. He should have thrown that away or done something. He should not have taken that sack. It would have given them a lot more options to maybe go forward. I think that kind of helped make the decision. I mean, I think if it would have been closer, they would have probably gone for it. But that sack kind of sealed the deal. My opinion, they would have... And if they wouldn't have converted, they would have been in field goal range for Michigan State. All they would have had to do is just run a couple plays and kick a field goal. Then it would have been over. It's not like you would have had a chance to stop them. They just had to kick a field goal. They could have done it on the first play.
There was a lot of reason to do that. Yeah, Kizer just had kind of a mental error. You know, he shouldn't have ran out like he did. But I still. The offense was clicking. We had been moving the ball for two drives leading up to that, scored touchdowns. So, obviously, it didn't work out. I wish I would have remembered exactly in the moment. Maybe I should have written it down. Like, would I have gone for it at that moment?
No, in the moment.
In hindsight, it's so easy to...
In the moment, we said no, kick it, because they were basically in field goal range. It was... The defense had stopped them a couple series in a row. They had the momentum in their favor, and maybe that's why some people say they should have gone for it, because they had the momentum. But there was a lot more options, I think, in, you know, punting it depending on the defense to get another stop.
Well, one thing I didn't understand, he called a timeout.
That didn't make sense.
And later he said that they were going to punt it regardless, but they called a timeout and had their offense out there so it would look like they were going to go for it, and then they ran out the punting team.
Yeah.
But I don't think... I think he called a timeout probably just thinking, well, let's get a good play, and then thinking more, we're in a horrible situation here if we don't convert this because they're in field goal range. Let's just kick it.
The one thing I would have done before that is on the... I think it was the last touchdown they scored. There was a penalty. Michigan State had a penalty, and it was added to the kickoff, I would have gone for an onside kick there.
We did talk about that, yeah.
The short field, there you obviously would have, you know, even if they would have made it there, they would have been a lot better situation than trying to go for it on fourth down later. But that would have been a perfect opportunity to try an onside kick.
Yeah, Notre Dame hasn't kicked a whole lot.
The special teams that we've seen, and they see a lot more practice, maybe that's what.
Notre Dame hasn't kicked a whole lot of field goals these first three games.
No.
So you would think, well, maybe they should start, and we've been playing from behind against these big teams, so maybe some more time should be spent on onside kick, the onside kicking unit.
Yes.
All right, we did get some numbers in from Tony that he wanted to make sure that, and Tony is very much in the Fire BVG camp.
He is blinded by it and doesn't see anything else.
Which, his score prediction was 24-23 Notre Dame winning, and it seems he still predicts the defense to hold the opposing offense down way fewer points every, maybe not against, I forget what his score prediction was against Nevada.
Oh, I was surprised there too. I've been surprised by his predictions because of his
based off how poorly
how he talks about the defense. Yeah. You would think that he expects the opposing team to score 40 points every week.
Notre Dame is tied for first place in some statistics. So they're tied for not having any sacks.
Oh, okay.
In the first 3 weeks. Here we go. Defense. Yards per game, Notre Dame is 102nd. Sacks were 127th. Depends which way you look at it. Points per game, Notre Dame is 94th. And this is defensive stats here. So points per game, giving up points. Passing yards per game, 84th. Rushing yards per game, 99th. Plays over 60 yards, 127th. And that's maybe... That's a big problem.
That, I think, is the worst one because you could... One argument you could throw in there into some of these rankings is that so far some of the teams have not played anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So you could throw that argument. They'd still be ranked. I'm not going to say it'd be a lot better, but it would look better if everybody played the same talent or the same level of opponents that Notre Dame did. But that right there, you'd think that, you know, there's some terrible teams that would have given up a lot more than that.
Offensively, yards per game, Notre Dame is 60th. Points per game, 41st. Rushing yards per game, 72nd. Passing yards per game, 40th. Third down percentage, 52nd. So,
not good.
All right, some things that I really, really loved from this past weekend. And there were a few. Newsom had a record or a personal best 71-yard punt, longest since 98.
Hunter Smith.
And Notre Dame defense, they did snuff out a couple pass screens, snuff or sniff. Probably my favorite play of the game offensively was the run-pass option by Kaiser where he rolled out to the left, looked like he was going to run it. EQ was blocking his man on the side, then he released the defender as Kaiser was starting to kind of turn the corner. Kaiser instead passes the ball to EQ as his defender started rushing Kaiser. Big gain there for EQ. And then my other best thing is Brian Kelly going for it at the end of the half.
That's a good one.
What are some best things for you that stood out?
Man, best things. They're hard to find in a game like this. It was exciting to see Sanders return the opening kickoff because I do not think that penalty made a difference. He would have returned it anyways. So that has to put a little fear in other teams. When they're preparing for Notre Dame, they're going to be watching out for him on special teams. And then, oh, man. I actually was impressed with some of the things the defensive line. They had very bad plays, but the defense still came up with some, you know, they didn't get a sack, but they did get pressure on him a couple times. You saw the young guys being involved. You saw Dalen Hayes drop dropping coverage, which it was a good, it was actually a good thing. Not all the drops are bad. It worked like it was supposed to. He tipped the ball. Devin Studstill caught it. Even though Studstill looked very awkward trying to run with a football in his hands, he did make the interception.
And he did look really good in coverage. And yeah. At first, I thought it was a tight end, but the TV announcer said it was the slot receiver. So okay. It's not like it was a 265-pound lumbering tight end. It was a speedster, and he was running with him step for step.
Well, that was Jay Hayes. Down the sideline?
No.
Oh, on that play.
The play where it was tipped.
Jay Hayes had another where he dropped and was running with the receiver. He didn't catch him, but he was still right there. I see a defensive lineman moving pretty good. But maybe that also shows that there's some other things, that his injury isn't as bad. So what is keeping him off the field?
Well, he did play up, or he did blow up the offensive line on one play where it was a very short gain or maybe even a tackle for loss.
Yeah. Corey Holmes made that third down catch, critical third down catch, so he's only caught two passes now, and they've both been on third down. Looked like the same play, but very critical plays.
And a tough ball to catch, too.
Yeah. Not the best thrown ball by Kaiser, but yeah. He still made the catch, made the play. There are things when you start, there are small things that, you know, I still think that if they just clean up some of this stuff, they can win these games. They're not going to win all of them, but they're not that far away. It's not, the sky hasn't fallen yet.
But we said that after Texas. The reason to me that the sky has fallen is because now we're not playing for a playoff. I mean,
that will be interesting to see how the team responds to that.
There was, you know, even after Texas, it is the first game. There was still, from a fan's perspective,
I told you after that game they're not going to make the playoffs.
There was still that hope that, well, hey, if we do go undefeated, there's a very good chance. Now that is taken away, and now that there is the playoff, to me, I don't care if they're playing in a New Year's Day bowl or not.
The BCS bowl?
Yeah.
I know, it's just the hype.
There is more hype, but to me, yeah, it doesn't matter anymore.
It's playoffs or bust.
If you're not in the playoff, then I don't care. I mean, get to a bowl game. I care about that. Yeah, get to the post. Get to a bowl game. Other than that, I don't care.
Yeah.
Although it might make a bigger, it probably wouldn't make a bigger difference with recruiting, if it is a more hyped up game. Anyway, worst things, and there was a lot to choose from. I just picked out two that we haven't talked about. Personal foul on Fertitta, another special teams penalty, where he is kind of standing over the Michigan State player. Just a stupid play. Just get off the guy. I know you want to try to intimidate, but just don't.
It's his UFC. It's because of all the time he spent around UFC fighters.
Well, if you're going to do that, you may as well take your helmet off and knock the other guy out.
Yeah, I agree.
And then my other one was, we did kind of talk about this, but tackling, same thing with Texas. The Michigan State offensive player, the Texas offensive player, they're always falling forward for an extra 2 yards. And this is something that the Notre Dame post-game radio show that they talked about too, is you've got to wrap up and drive the defender back. And this is what they said, and I agree with them. It seems like the defensive players, are trying to get a big hit. Julian Love coming in for the sack, trying to make a big hit. And even some of the open field tackles where we saw Cole Luke miss a tackle, looks like they're going for a big hit. Just wrap up and drive back. You don't need to knock the guy out.
Yeah.
Just stop their forward progress. Don't let them fall forward for another 2 yards.
I think it does have something to do. I mean, I was cool with it too, but it's the young guys just trying to make that big play and impress everybody.
See, I think this comes down to...
But starters. I shouldn't say young guys, because Tranquil is one of the worst guys, but he hasn't played a lot. Even though he's been there for a couple of years, he hasn't played a lot.
The defense probably feels like, we've got to make a big play. Everybody thinks we suck. The offense is having some struggles. We've got to make a huge play. We've got to go knock this guy out, knock the ball loose. And then what happens is a missed tackle, or at the very least, a tackle, but the offensive player is falling forward for another few yards.
Yeah. Was that both of yours?
Yeah, I just had two for the worst. I thought we exhausted. For me personally, I'm finished talking about bad things.
Yeah, the tackling and the penalties, something's got to happen with that. As far as one of the worst players, Cole Luke had one of the worst days. And what hurts even more, looking at that, seeing that touchdown or that interception he should have had, he is a senior. That receiver is a first year. That was his first career touchdown in college. He's a true freshman.
His first reception?
Touchdown.
For his first touchdown.
Yes. And he took that away from Cole Luke.
Yeah.
That should not happen. I really think if Cole Luke would have done what he normally does, they could have won this game. He gave, at that last drive, they were ready to stop them, and then Cole Luke got lost in coverage. And that's how they got a huge play out of that, which gave them a first down and ended the game. And he just made the one touchdown drive was basically all him. He had a very bad game. Maybe we jinxed him.
He also had that pass interference penalty, which
had to be done.
That was a heads up on him, but he wasn't in position.
Yeah. But yeah, there's. Yeah, we could go on all day on all the bad things.
All right,
but I will say this. For all the people that thought we wouldn't miss Max Redfield, thing that could help this team is if Brian Kelly could bring him back to Notre Dame, let him join the team, and do something, because our safeties are terrible. Stud still looked pretty good, but he's a true freshman. But that was a huge loss. And I'm just going to put it at that. Oh, one more thing I meant. That two-point conversion that Michigan State did at the beginning of the game, I don't know if they knew. Something like that it was like putting the knife into Notre Dame's heart and like moving it around. If Brian Kelly would have done that, gone for two-point conversion that early in the game, I was in Michigan State, ended up losing, nobody's going to talk about it. But why were they doing that? It's almost like they knew that they could beat Notre Dame mentally and win the game. It's almost like they knew it. I don't know if it was because of how the Texas game went, watching film. I don't know what it was, but it's like D'Antonio knew it. And because it was odd that they went for it.
Yeah,
but they needed the momentum, and it worked.
Maybe they do this a lot, but from what I have watched Michigan State, from what I know of them, that seemed very out of character.
Yeah. I guess the positive thing, it wasn't as bad a loss as Florida State had against Louisville. And Jimbo Fisher actually sent a season with TV crew off the field during the game.
He did?
Yep. He kicked him off the sideline.
Oh, because that was the one episode I was going to watch.
So, that never happened, which it was never that bad at Notre Dame either, last year. But
no, they were just off for the rest of that game.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he got tired of it and kicked him off the field, off the sideline. So.
Oh, that is funny.
I guess if you feel too depressed, a lot of Notre Dame fans hate Florida State, so.
All right, here's some Twitter questions or topic discussions. Someone asked, can you loan me $50,000 to bet on the Duke 21-point spread? I was curious what the spread was going to be for this game, and maybe it has come down now. But Notre Dame could bounce back in a big way. Duke doesn't look very good. But I would bet this is going to be more of a 10-12-point game than a 21-point game.
Here's the thing. You should probably bet on it because the spread, the points have basically been dead on for every game, Notre Dame game. They just picked the wrong winner.
That is true. Well, I didn't think Michigan State was going to win, but I'm more confident that Duke will not win by 21 points. So, okay. People are saying Kelly needs to go too. I don't think that's the case. Carl McHenry asks, how did the defense get this bad? What was the tipping point? Crawford injury? Will it improve? I don't think Crawford was the tipping point. I mean, I think he was a big playmaker and definitely would improve the defense. But this defense also had issues against Texas. It's more than just one player not being there. What's the tipping point? I don't know if there's a tipping point, but I think it starts with the defensive line. And they do, I mean, even against Texas, they graded out pretty well, but I think we need explosive plays from them. And we do see it here and there, but just not on a consistent basis.
Yeah, I just think it all comes back to the stupid penalties and the missed tackles.
The missed tackles are huge because you can be a solid defense, give up 20, 24 points per game, and as long as you don't miss tackles, you know, you can kind of keep it at that. But if you miss tackles, you know, you can give up, like we've seen, 36, 50 points per game. Derek Gerber asks, were you subconsciously glad to see what happened to the defense Saturday to have more evidence to get rid of BVG?
No, I don't think I would be. It would take a lot for me to be at the point of rooting against Notre Dame. For them to have a bad, to try to get rid of somebody, or it just, I'm still hoping all on that they can somehow turn it around.
The quickest way to get a good defense is, I do believe, with Brian Van Gorder, to get things fixed, get things turned around. If you get a new defensive coordinator, if he does get fired and Brian Kelly steps over and takes charge of the defense for the rest of the year, you're still going to have a huge learning curve this next season. So I do think best case scenario is that it gets figured out with Brian Van Gorder, with the scheme that they have. But at some point, if it's not going to be that, you need to make a change. One thing I was surprised about, I didn't see any tweets when Kaiser was struggling. I didn't see any tweets about bringing in Zaire, and I honestly was surprised. I did figure I would see some, man, we got to give Zaire a shot.
Maybe Brian Kelly intentionally brought out Zaire against Texas just to calm the fans down.
Can you imagine? What if they both would have played just average against Texas? Oh, man. Well, we probably still would be 1-2. It probably wouldn't have made a difference in wins and losses.
It would have looked a lot worse.
It would have looked worse, yeah.
I don't think we would have mounted this comeback. Because you couldn't... Yeah, that's a whole other subject. But you couldn't have... It'd be hard to come back from being down like that with Zaire as quarterback.
Randall, what were your thoughts on Brian Van Kelly kind of taking
Brian
blame?
Van Kelly?
Ugh. On Brian Kelly taking blame and saying... It's coaching. He's got to do a better job. And the coordinators and the assistant coaches, they have to do a better job of coaching.
I think he was right on, and I was glad to hear him say that. Now we'll have to see if that actually happens. I mean, maybe we won't really find out. But I do think a lot of this does come down to the coaching.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of recruits on campus. Did Notre Dame pick up any new recruits or make any positive headway? Because that's what I was thinking when Notre Dame was down 36 to, was it 36 seven. To seven?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, there was, it wasn't as bad for the recruits. There was one time I actually agreed with Coach D from Blue and Gold. He tweeted out that there was a lot of people figured that they would pick up a commitment from Donovan Jeter, which I'll tell you that. Donovan Jeter did commit today. Defensive lineman from Pennsylvania, another Pennsylvania guy. Four-star. Some people have a defensive end, defensive tackle. He's kind of that in-between guy. We'll see where he ends up.
The perfect kind of guy you want to drop in coverage.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. But obviously it made a good impression on him. Yeah, huge pickup for Notre Dame. Anyways, what he tweeted out was, if he does actually, he said, if he does in fact commit to Notre Dame tomorrow, and I'm not saying he is, it backs up my belief recruits are more rational than fans. It's true.
Well, and let's play out this scenario. I don't know who was in Donovan's top five or top two.
Notre Dame was not one of them.
Okay.
Before this, Notre Dame was not one of them.
Just imagine.
He planned to commit on Halloween, October 31st.
Just imagine if his top three were Notre Dame, Florida State, and Ole Miss. Well, all three of those teams lost and gave up a ton of points.
Alabama was in his top.
Okay. They won, but they gave up a ton of points, too, and looked pretty bad there for a little bit.
Yeah.
We do overreact as fans. We definitely do. But, yeah, good pickup from Notre Dame.
And it sounds like a lot of the recruits enjoyed the visit, came away very impressed with Notre Dame. It just continues to show that you get them on campus, they see everything that goes on there, they like it. So whenever Notre Dame can get guys on campus, they need to do it because that seems to be what gets a lot of these guys.
All right. I do also want to mention another advertiser, Fan Essential. You can go over to their website, fanessentials.net. Use promo code Irish Sports Talk for a 15% discount. And what Fan Essentials is a monthly fan box filled with gear from your favorite sports team. Whether you're a fan of the Colts like we are, maybe you're a fan of the Miami Heat, Cleveland Cavaliers, whatever it is, they've got pro teams covered, and they are working on college teams as well. They don't have Notre Dame as of yet, but you can pick up your favorite professional sports teams gear for under $35 a month. Use promo code Irish Sports Talk for a 15% discount, and every month they'll ship you fan gear that's picked out by fans of that sports team. So it's unique things, it's picked out, it's special, and I'm sure you'll love it. I did get some Pacers gear a few weeks ago, and I'll tweet out a picture here once I get it set up in a nice Instagram-esque sort of way, something I'm not great at doing. Anyway, Randall, who is our winner for our 1 pound of coffee for the score prediction winner?
Well, it's actually sad. It is.
Actually, sorry, one more thing I forgot to mention. We will be giving away a free box from Fan Essentials. If you retweet this episode number 331, is that what 332. It'll be pinned to the top of our feed. Retweet it, and then we'll announce the winner on Thursday. It'll be a random winner will be selected, and you might get your first box for absolutely free. Just retweet this episode. All right, who's our 1 pound of coffee winner?
Bucks Troy.
All right. Unfortunately, I do know that guy.
And it's because he predicted a loss. His Ohio statement, which he's been on the podcast, which was back before the Fiesta Bowl, before Notre Dame played. The funny thing is, I will throw this out, if you look at his Twitter feed, he obviously still wants to watch Notre Dame play because he has tweeted 3 times.
In his life?
Well, that's all it shows. And
Troy used to live around the area. I grew up with him. He's a really good friend. But he was always a Buckeye fan.
But the one tweet that he did, he retweeted it, was for a chance to experience the Notre Dame-USC rivalry at the LA Coliseum. That just kind of, I thought it was funny because we saw it, and it looks like he still wants to watch Notre Dame. When it comes down to it, he's trying to do whatever he can to get to one of the games. So anyways, yes, he was the winner. He had, his final score was 34-27, Michigan State.
So really close.
Yes.
All right.
What the other news that came out today, Notre Dame is maybe softening up their schedule a little bit. They are playing Toledo in 2021. So they did announce that. But it is right after the opening game against Florida State. So, the Syracuse game in 2 weeks, is kickoff is at noon Eastern time, which I don't like.
At this point in the season, I'd rather just let me watch the game early so I can go to bed early.
You're going to go to bed at 3:30?
All right, thank you guys for listening. if you want to, follow us on Twitter at Irish Sports Talk. And on game days, we're on the Game On app. It's kind of like a live chat. You can check that out. And I guess until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.